Quick poll. Hands up, anybody who knows what the word quaternary... Well, my wife. One geologist in the group. Okay, that's two. Well, that's a start. Quaternary science is the study of the most recent geologic era, the quaternary, which is the last 2.6 million years. So for those of you who think that the world is 6,000 years old, obviously I'm out of bounds already before I even start this talk. So the quaternary is sort of characterized as the time of ice ages, glaciations, which has shaped a lot of the northern hemisphere. And so because I study sort of deep time, as you might call it, I've had to be thinking about the age of the Earth since I started my studies as a university student, and hence sort of some of my musings today. Well, let me just say I'm not an expert on cosmology, the origins of the universe, or anything else. I would just like to present some ideas, get you to maybe think about some alternatives. I don't want to be stepping on people's long-cherished ideas. And if you disagree with me, that's fine. We'll just sort of take it from there. Okay, so let's think about a little... Now, this is difficult for me because I have to look at the screen and you at the same time. What the Bible is. The Bible is a book recounting the history of the Jews and their relationship with God. That's pretty much the Old Testament in a nutshell. It's a book proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ as the Messiah and Savior of the world. That's the New Testament in a nutshell. And it's a book recounting the history of the Christian church and Christians' relationship with God. Those are the New Testament epistles. So those are the sort of three branches of the Bible in a nutshell. It's important, I think, to realize what the Bible isn't, just as much as what it is. It is not a scientific textbook. It is not a blow-by-blow account of the history of the universe. It is not an astrophysics treatise. It is not an evolutionary biology treatise. And it is not a book describing the history of the rest of the world's people. It focuses on the Middle East. It does not talk about what happened in South Africa, South America, the New World, Tahiti, or anywhere else. It's just focused on one region of the world. So I think it's important to keep those things in mind. Okay, let's think about the intended audience, the original intended audience of the Old Testament. Who were the people who would have heard the stories that we now know of in the Old Testament? The first five books of the Old Testament were written by Moses, or at least passed down from Moses by oral tradition to subsequent generations. From about 3000 BC until about 70 AD, most of the hearers of the Bible would have been illiterate Jewish farmers, shepherds, and other manual laborers. Not scholars, not scientists. There weren't such a thing in those days. So what's the point in giving those people science lessons about the origins and age of the universe? That's not the point of the Bible at all. How did Moses receive the contents of Genesis? He certainly wasn't there. I'll just make that point first. He wasn't there at the beginning of the universe. He wasn't there at the origins of the world. So he had to be told by God, through an angel, through some sort of visions or dreams, how the universe began. How did we get the first few chapters of Genesis? Well, Moses wrote them down, but he had to receive it from God somehow, didn't he? So that's, I think it's a very important filter that we need to understand. Moses was not handed a book on the origins of the universe. He was given this information supernaturally by an angel, by dreams, by God somehow. So, what does Genesis actually say about the origins of the universe and our planet? It says quite succinctly in the very first verse, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." And if you're a sheep herder on a hill in Palestine, that's pretty much all you need to know. And in some ways, if you're a stockbroker in the 21st century, it's all you need to know. The Bible says the universe did not create itself. Now, I think that's an interesting thing. It says in the beginning, God created the universe. And if you believe that the universe created itself, then I really do admire your faith, because you have a bigger faith than I do. To think that random chance produced everything we see around us, I think is is a tremendous stretch, a leap of faith. And it is a belief system, whether you would like to admit that or not. Okay, what the Bible doesn't say about creation is when it took place. And it also doesn't tell us what natural processes God set in motion in order to achieve his aims. It just says he created. Okay, what about the idea that the earth is 6,000 years old? I wish I had I don't have a pointer. I would like to emphasize that first line a couple of times. This is not in the Bible. A lot of people think it is. That the Bible actually says that the earth is 6,000 years old. The Bible doesn't say anything like that. This was the reckoning of this man over here in the corner. As you can see, a sort of Renaissance man there with the ruffed collar, 17th century Archbishop Usher. And yes, that's not a misprint. That's how he spelled his name, two S's. He was Archbishop of Armagh, and he, quote, established, unquote, that the world was created on the 6 days before Sunday, the October the 24th. It sounds silly, doesn't it? 4004 B.C. I don't know if he actually said the time of day or not, but from our perspective, looking back 300 years, that seems rather silly that anyone would try to pin down the date. You know, why not the 23rd of October? It all seems rather silly to us, but people get hung up on this idea that the earth is 6,000 years old and that the Bible says so. Well, no, Archbishop Usher said so quite a few centuries ago. Okay, so how do we reconcile then the Genesis account of creation with what we have learned from science? There are various approaches, and I would say pick your approach and go with it. There's no right or wrong about this. These are different ways of looking at it. You can believe that the earth was created in six 24-hour days, just like a modern 24-hour day. You can believe that the 6 days were actually 6 days of visions given to Moses that he wrote down, or that the whole story is more or less allegorical and not meant to be historical blow by blow, or that there were a series of sort of mystical visions. So we'll explore each of these ideas here in turn. So the six literal days of creation is held by many fundamentalist Christians, and especially in my country. It's sort of a litmus test for me, unfortunately, when I visit Christian churches. People ask me, oh, what do you do for a living? I say, well, I'm a quaternary scientist. Oh, what's that? And I explain, and they say, so how old do you think the earth is? And I'm waiting, because when I cross that line, I'm going to be shunned. So I think if it's more than 6,000 years and it was not created in six literal days, then, we'll be praying for you. Because obviously you're deluded. So many people do believe this, and honestly, it does not affect your daily life unless you're somebody like me who deals with deep time questions day in and day out. So, if you're a milkman, a postman, a fireman, a housekeeper, a school teacher, and unless you're teaching the sciences, it doesn't matter. It's not that important. But if you do believe it, then you have to believe certain other things, that science has got it completely wrong. How could that be? Well, and again, some people hold to this. Scientists are liars, that they actually know that the earth is 6,000 years old and they're keeping it from us. Or they're just completely deluded. They can't figure out the truth. They're groping around in the dark and they've just missed it completely. And there's actually a body of belief out there that says that Satan, the devil, has fabricated all the geologic evidence. I kid you not. Or that God has created a bunch of false clues. All those dinosaur bones sticking out of the ground in various places were put there by God to test us, test our faith. I know people who believe these various lines of, I hate to call it logic, but that's their belief system. Okay, so my personal objections to some of those ideas. I know enough about dating methods, for instance, because that's sort of my stock and trade, to know that they're not lying. These dating methods follow physical laws, laws of physics. Radioactive decay, for instance, is something you can measure in a laboratory. It's not whimsical, doesn't change over time, doesn't change with different temperatures or what you had for breakfast or anything else. It really is a physical law how radioactive decay occurs. And I believe that God is the author of those laws. You may disagree with that, but I think He created physics. They're His atoms. He knows how they work, and they're obeying His laws. Okay, I also think that science is not perfect, but honestly, I know a lot of scientists, and they're seeking after truth. They're not out to destroy Genesis. They're really trying to find out the truth of the world and the universe. I object to the idea that Satan is the creator, because I mean the Bible never says that Satan is the author of anything but confusion and lies and bad things. He's not the creator of anything. So that's giving him way too much authority to say that he created the world in this way. I mean, the Bible, the very first sentence we talked about, God created the heavens and the earth. It doesn't say, and then Satan came along and threw in a bunch of false clues. And finally, God himself is not the author of confusion. So I do not believe, honestly, at the deepest point of my heart, that God would throw a bunch of fossil clues out there to try to trip us up, try to test our faith. Okay, so what does that leave us with? Some other alternatives then. 6 days of visions given to Moses by God. So Moses had a series of visions or dreams, and he wrote down what he saw in his visions or dreams, or others did later that was passed along orally. We don't know if Moses wrote these things down or if he passed them along and eventually someone else did. But he received it, and he wrote it down just as he received it. And if that's the case, then it pretty much gets around the whole problem of thinking that Genesis 1 to 3 is a blow-by-blow account of the creation of the universe. It's just a series of visions given to Moses by God. Now, so for instance, I think I've read a book that explained it in this way. Now, if I were to be a very skillful builder and built a house, and one of you came up to me 20 years later and say, "I really like this house. How did you build it?" I would tell you about it, but I might not actually give you, the sort of chronologic order of events. I might talk about how we acquired the land, how we built the foundations. I might mention what the roof is made of before I mention how the walls were put up, even though the roof had to go up after. I mean, the roof had to go up after the walls. So, in other words, it could be the story of how the house was built, but not necessarily exactly in chronologic order, but it's still the story of how it was done. And the story in Genesis is the story of how it was done, but not necessarily in the right order or, as I say, as a blow-by-blow historical account. Okay, so then could it be an allegory? An allegory is a story that's got a sort of hidden meaning that has to be interpreted. But there's no indication in the Bible that the story in Genesis is allegorical. Jesus himself told many, many allegorical stories, but he would always preface them by saying something like, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man who did such and such. It's like this, it's like that." Those words "is like" are the little clue that this is not what it is, it's just what it's like. So the Bible doesn't say that about, in the new beginning, God did something like this. No, it said he did this. So I don't think, personally, that the story of creation is an allegory. How about a mystical vision? I think something, if you accept that the universe is actually quite ancient, I mean really ancient, I think the current estimate's around 13.7 billion years, but watch this space because it's constantly changing as people adjust their, measurements and so forth. So if Genesis 1 to 10 covers perhaps 13.7 billion years, that's a very long time. From the origins of the universe to the time of Abraham in 10 chapters, Moses was alive for, a tiny fraction of 1% of that, and it had to be given to him as a series of stories passed down through hundreds of generations or directly by God or through an angel. So heavenly visions, how do we think about heavenly visions? We don't generally think of heavenly visions as blow-by-blow accounts, do we? Those of you who are Bible scholars will think of the visions of Daniel, the visions of the Apostle John, the book of Revelation. None of us takes those as a blow-by-blow account of what's going to happen in the future. They're all very difficult to understand, sort of shrouded in the mysteries of deep time in the future. So why should we treat Moses' visions of the origins of the universe differently than we treat, let's say, John's visions of the future? Okay, so here's my one little attempt at a graphic. This is the history of the universe, start to finish. Not easy to depict. On the left, in the multicolored spectrum there, is Genesis 1 to 10, covering 13.7 billion years. Then we have the rest of the entire Old and New Testament, covering roughly 3000 BC to 70 AD. And then we've got the book of Revelation that takes us into the infinite future. Who knows how long infinity is? Well, that's pretty much an impossible question, isn't it? And yet we want to treat Genesis completely differently than the way we treat Revelation. My argument is, why should they be different? I think they're very much similar, covering enormous spans of time that people can't understand anyway. I can't get my mind around a million years, much less 13.7 billion years. So that's just food for thought. Okay, then we come up against another thorny problem of evolution. If you hold to the 6 literal 24-hour days of creation, then Darwin's not going to do much for you. His theory of evolution just won't work at all. If you can accept the idea that there were 6 days of visions given to Moses about so long, long period of time, then it's possible to accommodate the theory of evolution. And rather than evolution being a lie or a satanic plot or an attempt by scientists to prove that God doesn't exist, then it's possible to accept evolution as possibly God's way of creating life as we see it around us, a process that took actually billions of years. The first evidence of life we have on Earth is about 500 million years old. 500 million years, we have some tiny little fossils, trace fossils from ocean sediments that indicate that life is already established by then, even if it was only sort of very simple single-celled type algae and things like that. So we don't actually know, we can't put a date on the origins of life on the planet because tiny little squidgy things at the bottom of the ocean don't leave much of a fossil record. So. Okay. We get some silly ideas, but there are people who hold to this, and I'm sorry, if you hold to this idea yourself, I apologize. But I have heard fundamentalists say that the reason that there are no dinosaurs today is because they didn't fit on the ark. So they all drowned. And in fact, here it is depicted in a sort of mural from a so-called creation museum in Kentucky. Dinosaurs who missed the boat, so to speak. And mastodons, and let's throw in all of the ancient life. I mean, literally all of it, and there's an awful lot of it. Okay, if you want to believe that, that's up to you. Doesn't work for me. But I think it takes a lot of special pleading to explain away the entire fossil record of the planet. All the plants and animals that have lived, died out, became extinct, long before humans existed. Rock formations containing these fossil bones and other traces of hard objects turned to stone, buried in deep layers upon layer of loose sediment that then became rock. And this is all happening in the last 6,000 years. From what we know of how rock forms, it takes much longer than 6,000 years to form. So this is a very important geologic principle, uniformitarianism. This was come up with in the early 19th century, late 18th century. Lyell was one of the sort of proponents of this, a geologist. But uniformitarianism is a great spelling word. You know, you can use it in Scrabble if you can get that many letters together. But what it means is basically the way that the world works now, the way we can observe nature working now, is the way that it has worked in the past. Now, that was a revolutionary idea in 1800 because up until then, Western thinkers, as it were, there weren't too many scientists around before then, had assumed that the biblical flood, the flood of Noah, had buried and created all these deposits of rocks. And all the fossils that we see in all those rocks, these were all animals and plants that died in the flood. Now, they didn't know about dinosaurs and other sort of extinct forms so much in those days. They were just starting to discover them. So it was a little easier to explain everything as having been caused by the flood when you didn't know about all these other strange and awkward fossils. But if you want to look at deep time, I suggest a trip to the Grand Canyon. I would suggest a trip there anyway, just for the sheer beauty of the place. Interestingly, the Grand Canyon itself is not that old. It's just a few million years old, but it's been eroded by the Colorado River, coming from my home state and doing a lot of damage when it reached Arizona. But if you look at the geology of the rocks in the Grand Canyon, they're all in lovely, what I would call stratigraphic order. So the youngest is at the top, the oldest is at the bottom. And on the left here is a sort of geologic time frame that we put those rocks into, going back to the Precambrian era, so that's half a billion years and older, and then Ordovician, Silurian, Devonian, Carboniferous, Permian. These are all different ages characterized by different groups of fossils, carefully studied and worked out over the last couple of centuries. You don't get any young fossils at the bottom. You don't get any old fossils at the top. And you don't get any evidence of humans in any of this. Okay, so this uniformitarianism then says the present is the key to the past. And if you accept the six literal days of creation, then you must reject uniformitarianism. Okay, so can we trust the physical evidence? That's kind of one of the big questions of today, really. A young Earth believer has no way to account for many things. The annual layers of ice laid down on the Greenland ice cap and the Antarctic ice cap, they can actually count back 120,000 annual layers in the Greenland ice cores. And they know how much accumulates year by year. And when they do independent dating of specific layers in the ice through things like volcanic ash, it all makes sense. It all lines up stratigraphically. The measured rates of decay of radioactive isotopes are, like I say, very testable in a laboratory. So unless the laws of physics have actually changed, we can trust those ages. Things like the decay of radioactive uranium to lead, the decay of radioactive carbon to nitrogen. And then, like I said, the entire fossil record, including millions of now extinct species, has to be explained away somehow. And then finally, the rock layers of the Grand Canyon and many, many other places. Very difficult to explain this if the Earth is just 6,000 years old. Okay, if you reject the physical evidence, then what? You have to believe one of the following, I think. Now, maybe someone else here will give me some other ideas, but I think you're kind of stuck with these alternatives. God is capricious. He's changed the way he does things. I see some head shaking at the back. That's good. God has deliberately built up a false record of Earth history to test our faith. Satan is actually the author of all these false records. Or scientists are liars or deceivers or trying to lead the world astray, attempting to disprove the Bible. And I don't think any of these is true. My opinion. Okay, what are scientists really like? Well, you've probably all been dying to know that. You can ask my wife. She's married to one. And there's one in the corner there with his test tubes and his fiendish laugh. The fools, they'll regret this. Well, I've worked with a lot of scientists in the last, gosh, horrible, isn't it? Almost 40 years. Many different people, many different backgrounds, many different countries. I've never yet met any that just didn't have a passion for trying to get at the truth, trying to understand how the world works. They are not deceivers of the public. They are not in it for the money, I can tell you that for sure. There's no profit margin in being a scientist. It's basically a fundamentally honest profession. It's not motivated by political ambition, greed. I mean, you don't know any great scientists that became politicians, do you? I can't think of any. And sadly, you know, when I sort of donned my first lab coat, scientists used to be trusted and respected by the public. When I was a kid, we thought scientists were great. You know, the 1960s, the space race and all that, we admired scientists and technicians. And now they seem to be disrespected, and if people don't say what they want to hear about climate change, for instance, then they're a bunch of crackpots and environmental zealots. So the public perception of science, I think, has deteriorated in the last 20 years, which I think is unfortunate, because we're still out there trying to find how the universe works. So there's a tension between being a Christian and a scientist. Certainly fundamentalist Christians distrust or even shun you if you admit that you don't believe that the Earth is just 6,000 years old. That's not such a problem in this country. I've yet to meet anybody who shunned me because of my beliefs. Some might, and maybe you're just more polite. Maybe you're thinking, this guy's a feckless idiot, but I'm not going to tell him to his face because I'm British, we don't do that. And then if you go to your fellow scientists and say, I believe in creation, they say, well, you're obviously deluded. You really think the Earth is 6,000 years old? You must be crazy, because they have so much evidence to the contrary. So that's the little sort of tightrope that I walk day by day. But, and you can see how I've sort of tried to work my way through these problems. I'm perfectly happy with God creating the universe and creating the being the author of life and everything else we see around us. I just don't think it happened on a Saturday or a Sunday in October 6,000 years ago. So, my response to Christians, and I kind of fire this home to Christians, and those of you who know your scriptures will know this verse, I am resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Sorry, I get choked up about this. The age of the earth is not a salvation issue. It's not good. My entrance through the pearly gates is not going to depend on my belief about the age of the earth. It's all about Jesus Christ. Have I made Him my Savior or not? If I have, I'm in. If I haven't, nothing I can do is going to change it. So that's what I put to people when they press me. Well, if you're a good Christian, how can you believe that? And I say, let's talk about Jesus Christ and Him crucified. That's what really matters. Okay. And my response to scientists, I tell them, if you believe the universe created itself out of nothing, then I really do admire your faith. My faith not only explains how the universe was created, but why. Science never tries to answer the question, why? It's not part of science's remit. How, maybe, when, but never why. Why are we here? God, scientists do not try to answer the question, why are we here? Or if they do, they're not scientists anymore. They're stepping out of science and taking on a different mantle. So, my belief answers my question, what am I here for? Okay, important take-home messages of Genesis. The first one is a bumper sticker that I like from the U.S. There is a God and you're not Him. God is the author of creation. God made humans. We're different from the other animals. I haven't really gotten into that, but that could be a whole other lecture, couldn't it? We are moral beings. We are able to choose to do right and wrong. That's what it really means by we're made in His image. I don't really think it means that God has a long white beard like I do and two eyes and two ears and a nose. We're made in His image where we are thinking beings like He is. We are moral beings like He is. You know, a salamander, God bless him, does not make moral choices day in and day out. It just eats insects and tries to find another salamander to mate with. But we make moral choices minute by minute. We are created like Him, and we are made with a need to worship something. Now, this is an interesting thing. We're worshipful creatures. You can't get away from it. Even if you're an atheist, you will worship your agnosticism or your atheism. Hopefully God, not money, not fame, Lady Gaga, Manchester United, or any other being or entity is worthy of our worship except God. But we have this built-in need to worship something, which I think should raise a sort of warning flag to atheists. Why do I have this feeling? And that's pretty much all I wanted to say, so I will now take questions.